thousand things I want to say to you. But whenever I approach you, you make me look up.
You're listening to WRIR 97.3 LPFM, Richmond Independent Radio, and this is RVA Report, WRIR's weekly current affairs talk show, where community thought and political leaders gather to weigh in on the headlines, their significance, and where they may take us tomorrow. But first, the news.
They want to say it. They're going to tell you about the young idea. They better listen now, you said you're big.
For Open Source RVA, I'm Brittany Tracy, and here's the news. The final report of the Mayoral Breastfeeding Commission was submitted to Mayor Dwight C. Jones on Tuesday. The report took 2 years analyzing breastfeeding resources in Richmond and identifying the populations most in need of outreach and education initiatives, specifically low-income mothers. The report highlights 4 basic recommendations for the continued promotion of breastfeeding as a public health initiative. Commission member Leslie Little, a prenatal yoga instructor, certified childbirth educator, and co-founder of the maternity resource center Nurture, spoke with Open Source about breastfeeding as a public health initiative with real benefits for mother, child, and society. Not only are there proven beneficial health outcomes from natural, nutritionally optimal mother's milk, but dramatically reduced likelihood of disease for both parties and huge social savings in treatment costs. The American Academy of Pediatricians recommends breastfeeding until baby's first birthday, and Little says that
if 90% of women could breastfeed until that 1 year point, it's been estimated that that would create $17 billion a year in cost savings just for the mothers. When mothers breastfeed, they reduce their own incidence of heart attacks, breast cancer, ovarian cancer, and type 2 diabetes, and obesity. And suboptimal breastfeeding rates contribute to about $13 billion a year in pediatric costs, or babies that have higher incidences of diarrhea, allergies, asthma, SIDS, and including obesity later in life.
Little is also employed by the Virginia Foundation for Healthy Youth's Richmond Healthy Start Initiative. She researches how childhood obesity could be drastically reduced with a simple step, breastfeeding.
If we could enable women to successfully breastfeed, we could save enormous amounts of money and profoundly influence the health of not only the current generation of women, but the future generations of children, not just while they're children, but throughout their lives.
Education is the keystone bridging all 4 recommendations of the Mayoral Commission for Richmond's health systems to become, quote, baby-friendly accredited, and training mothers in accordance with the Baby-Friendly Hospital Initiative guidelines, for Richmond businesses to provide lactation support programs and spaces for their employees and patrons, for Richmond healthcare providers in prenatal, postpartum, or child-rearing fields to present coordinated resources and a strong message of support for breastfeeding, and for a social media campaign to provide the public with information on the benefits and importance of breastfeeding. Little says she expects to be involved with the last 2 recommendations, education for expecting families and new mothers, and education for the public.
In order for women to be able to successfully breastfeed, the community has to be supporting her. So I'm making our community aware that this is not just a lifestyle choice, but it's a serious and significant public health issue.
And speaking of educating the community, the Big Latch On, a global event to raise awareness and advocate for breastfeeding, came to Richmond in 2012 and will be back on August 3rd. The event is co-sponsored by all of the major health systems in Richmond, Bon Secours, VCU Medical, and HDA Medical.
Our ultimate goal is to have a dedicated maternity resource center where we're holding classes. And eventually, we hope to have lactation consultants and lactation classes in our facilities. Meantime, we're working on the community engagement piece. So if we can help to highlight issues like breastfeeding and make the general community more aware that this is not just an issue for childbearing families, but it really is a community health issue that we all should be supporting, we'll feel like we've gone a long way to helping breastfeeding and lactation in River City.
There once was a kid from Church Hill who had the best rhymes from here to Charlottesville. No, let's try again. This Saturday, don't have a dram, but compete at a poetry slam. Well, clearly our grasp of meter and rhyme are not in any way sublime, but if you can do better, if you're a person of letters, head to Richmond's Poetry Slam competition. Anyway, this Saturday at 8 p.m. at the Shop, 0 East 4th Street near Plant Zero in Manchester, it's Slam Richmond, Richmond's weekly poetry slam competition. Open to both kids and adults, poets compete by writing original pieces and reciting them for an audience and judges randomly selected from the crowd. Winners of each competition qualify for a chance to represent Richmond, Virginia at the National Poetry Slam Adult Competition and Brave New Voices Youth Competition.
The donkey and the elephant.
The donkey and the elephant, they walked one day to school. The elephant started talking, "I'm smarter than a mule." The donkey said to the elephant, "What make you think it's true?" The elephant said to the donkey, "Child, there's more of me than you." The donkey and the elephant.
It's hard to even recall how it all began. Keeping track of the seemingly ever-expanding scandal at Virginia's governor's mansion requires about 3 flowcharts, a knowledge of Excel spreadsheet software, and an extra-large bottle of Tylenol. First, there was the resignation of the governor's chef, amid reports that he'd taken food from the mansion, and that someone, gasp, had forgotten to do a background check on him. And speaking of checks, then there was the $15,000 check from local miracle elixir manufacturer Johnny Williams to pay for Governor Bob McDonald's daughter's wedding reception. A reception catered by the now disgraced chef. And then $15,000 ballooned. Vacation home getaways and rides in Williams' Italian roadster, and private loans, gifts, shopping sprees in the hundreds of thousands given by Williams to the McDonald's. Mostly to First Lady Maureen McDonald, who's been shilling nationwide for Williams' company. And then there was discovery that Williams' gifts weren't enough. The McDonald's were paying for all sorts of things, pet supplies, sunscreen, a colon cleanse treatment, out of state funds. And the rumors of FBI interviews with mansion staff, inside informants telling all, plea deals that have yet to materialize, and the oh-so-cavalier use of terms like federal indictment and resignation by the pundits. When will it all end? Not last week with McDonald's apology for himself and his family. And probably not this week with his pledge this past Tuesday to pay it all back, even as we're assured no crimes were committed.
Luxury protects us all from harm. The elephant and the donkey have never failed us yet. As soon as they're in power, their promise they forget. Their promise they forget. The donkey and the elephant.
I'm with Sean Kinney. He's chairman of the Fluvanna County Board of Supervisors and political editor at BearingDrift.com, and Charlie Diridor, a local businessman and pundit, and of course, Paul Goldman, the number one Words with Friends player by points per move in the U.S. and its territories. On a lesser note, he's also former Democratic Party chairman, who also was a former policy advisor to Mayor L. Douglas Wilder during the administration. Moving on. Tell us about your Words with Friends, Paul, before we get started. Are you really?
I'm dying to hear this. Go, man, go.
Are you actually on top right now?
Yeah, it's kind of amazing. They have 2 categories.
He's on
total
top.
Points that you play in a week and the points per move.
Your points per move?
I'm at the top of the points per move.
Which would you rather be at the head of? Points per move or total points for the week?
It's just fun.
I feel like we should just talk about that today, but let's move on. Guys, thanks for being with us today.
Thank you.
There we go. There's people here.
Thank you.
So on Tuesday, the press reported that Governor McDonald's non-scandal has so far cost the taxpayers about $53,000 in legal fees, 225 hours of legal services. On the same day, it was reported McDonald determined to return the remainder of the gifts that he'd received, and the scandal, the one that wasn't according to lawyers, is now over. Right, gentlemen?
Of course.
course it's not. We're nothing to see here. Bright, shiny objects rolling right across the table, and hopefully all the lemmings fall off the cliff with it. No, that's not good enough. I mean, the taxpayers of the Commonwealth of Virginia shouldn't have to pay $53,000 to defend the governor in a quote-unquote non-scandal. That's something that needs to be restituted on top of the Rolex watch, on top of the weddings, on top of everything that he's decided to put back on the shelf once he or his family took them. And even then, it's still not enough. I mean, what he took wasn't exactly the gifts. It was the trust of the voters of the Commonwealth. So at the end of the day, that needs to be restituted as well. And I'm not so sure that by pretending this, quote-unquote non-scandal isn't what it is, a scandal of the gravest magnitude, that he's really beating that bar.
Charlie, scandal's over, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Done.
There we go.
I seem to be the one who poses the ethereal questions here. The question is, does he resign, and when does he resign? We were hearing 3 weeks ago on a Sunday night from a blog, I don't know, that's out there, that it was going to happen the next day.
Whose blog was that?
I have no idea.
It was yours. It's whose it was.
One of our contributors, as a matter of fact, who's no longer a contributor.
And then we heard that, and then I've got friends who are making bets, not on Friends with Words or Words with Friends, but friends who are making bets on what day this will all come to a crashing end. I think the question is this, and I think the legal question should be posed to Paul. Paul, does he have to resign? Not politically. Legally, is he bound to resign? And if he does he use his tenure, his office, to work a deal with the U.S. attorney to not be indicted? Or is this indictment process going to proceed on down the road?
You're putting a lot on Paul.
Well, he's the champion of Words with Friends. He can handle this. He can handle this.
Tony, it costs you $50,000. I have to do it for free. I think Sean's taking some heat.
He was talking about Tony Troy, the former attorney general.
For publishing that stuff with Willie Deutsch. I think he was right to publish it. I mean, that's what blogs do. The guy, he trusted the guy, and he had been, responsible, and that's what you do. And he didn't accuse him of a crime. That's different. You have to separate this thing out. So I think it was fine that he published it, and he did then courageous to fire the guy, actually. So I applaud the Bering Drift. Even though I think they drift a little far for me, but that's a separate question. Now,
I knew this was going to be fun.
Yeah, that 80-proof sort of blog isn't for everyone, but that's all right.
Let's just go through a few of the facts that we know and we don't know. We really don't know there's any criminal investigation. The feds have never said that and won't say that. Neither will the state.
Where's the Washington Post getting their information from?
Well, they're a newspaper. They got sources, and they have to go with their sources. That's part of what they do. If they're wrong, then obviously they will suffer in the court of public opinion. Now, what we know about what the governor has done, let's just stick with the facts. There's no reason for him to resign. The process for getting rid of the governor has been in the state constitution's impeachment. The basic impeachment, just like it is at the federal level, you have some definitions, and technically the House would have to, have a bill of impeachment, and you get tried in the Senate. That's not going to happen. In terms of right now, there's no reason for the governor to resign in terms of any legal thing that we know about. There's no indication. No one's come forward.
So you're saying these gifts, again, under Virginia law and reporting laws, he's, as long as they, even after the fact, say, sorry about that, here's what we got, then everything is cool.
It's just like the Herring investigation of Cuccinelli, for instance. The law requires some intentionality. Just making a mistake or being dumb isn't a crime. And we have enough people in prison. If we put everybody in there who was dumb, there'd be nobody left to pay for the prison. So
I'd be doing this show from the telephone.
And so.
Although there's a lot of dumb criminals out there.
There probably are.
They were criminals when there they are, what but, they did. Probably
oh, criminals. Y'all just said dumb people. Sorry.
And so if there's no intentionality, and it's just either a mistake or interpretation. In fact, you know, in this case, you could probably, if you had a legal opinion from somebody that said, no, you don't have to report it, that would be enough, even if the legal opinion was wrong, because it would show that you had no intention to violate the laws.
So could you get that opinion from Cuccinelli?
Now you're just stirring the pot today.
Well, that's what I'm here to do. I mean, we've got an attorney general who should have, by all rights, as by custom, not by all rights, by custom, should have resigned.
Yeah, but let's stop there. I mean, it doesn't happen in any other state in the union. It's just something that we do, and politically, the only person who hasn't done it has basically been Marshall Coleman, and it didn't help him. But you know, there's no legal reason, there's really no political reason for somebody to resign. If governors run for re-election in every state, we don't allow that in this state, we're the only one that don't.
People, which is wrong.
The lieutenant governor of Virginia.
But it has created some sticky situations. That's
political judgment. Is it smart politically
to have stayed on? Legally, I've got my legal answer from you, Paul. So let's ask the political question.
A lot of free legal advice you just got.
I know. I got $50,000 later. Don't worry about it. Is that $50,000? Anyway,
cash.
Now, give me the. Don't start. The political answer is what? Does he resign in the next month?
I mean, the attorney general?
No, the governor.
The governor.
Based on what we know,
bacon in this gubernatorial race.
I don't think the McDonald is really that concerned about what happens to Cuccinelli.
That's clear. Maybe there's not a legal argument for it, but is there an ethical argument at the end of the day?
Come on, we're talking politics. Stop the ethical stuff.
No, there's got to be that
politically
line.
The ethical
line has got absolutely. I mean, there used to be something called the Virginia Way, and we've lost that here in the Commonwealth. You know, I mean, you have Senator Byrd that just recently passed away this week. You know, that's something that you'd like to think that that spirit is not dead in Virginia, and you've got today where you've got some people walk right up the line, some folks are doing dances in the end zone. You know, whether or not the governor's up the line or he's doing the dance at the end of the day, you know, we'll let the indictment, you know, if one comes down, you know, determine that one way or the other. But you know, at the ethical line, in terms of right and wrong, I think the governor owes a lot more than what he's put back so far.
I would agree with you at this time that ethically he owes the people of Virginia an apology, and I don't think that apology has come forward yet, has it?
Not in my opinion. I think he owes a lot more than an apology.
That's the first step.
But I mean, even the mea culpa that he gave was like, well, I apologize for half of the stuff that I took, and I'm going to put the half back. Well, is that really an apology at the end of the day, or is this like, well, you caught me with my hand in the cookie jar. I took three. I'm going to put two back, and I'm going to keep this one. That's not the way a mea culpa works, and it's not just a matter of apologizing. There has to be restitution at the end of the day, and what he took at the end of the day, was not the gifts. That's not what he took from us. He took our trust. He degraded our institutions. His family abused the privilege of the governor's mansion. That's what was taken from us, and when those institutions are no longer respected, and when we degrade those institutions, that's where corrective action needs to be applied. And it's not simply hiring a high power attorney, billing the Commonwealth of Virginia $53,000 and moving along and saying nothing to see here. It involves a resignation. I'm firmly convinced of that.
Paul, what about the out-of-state attorneys he's brought in?
Sure.
Well, let's also understand a couple of things. Tony Troy technically is only working on the embezzlement case.
Right, but he's not working on the
If he's paying for, if he wants his attorneys and wants to pay for them, what's interesting is that if you look at the polls, if you believe the polls that have been taken to date, he's essentially maintained his position with the Republicans, that people who identify as Republicans. A little bit of a loss, but they're still basically with him. The independents are still more for him than against him. Where he's really taken a loss is and where the strongest he's got to resign comes from is from the Democrats who didn't vote for him. And so that's to be expected. He was never their governor anyway. If you look at public opinion, if you assume that public opinion is a decent barometer of where things are, the public is not asking him to resign. They're not close to asking him to resign, and that's why he won't resign.
And I heard a yet from over there.
Yet. I mean, this is a governor whose approval ratings were once in the high 60s, and they're now in the high 30s. You know, the polls are showing that it's pretty much even as to whether or not he ought to resign. And amongst Republicans, they're split right down the middle. Mm-hmm. So that's where the governor, you know, he thinks he's going to be able to survive at the end of the day, but the story's not over yet. I mean, every single day seems to come up with a new revelation. And that's where it gets somewhat sticky. And when either the feds or the state come down with an indictment, which, again, rumored to be occurring, has not occurred quite yet, but should that occur, I think that that's where a lot of folks, you know, begin to say, you know what, Governor, you know, it's time. You know, you owe us a little bit more than what you've given us so far.
Well, now, and if this is over, he's now paid back what he needs to pay back. Is there any reason to hold on to that law firm, the outside attorneys from out of state? He's got Troy here locally who helped to deal with, I guess, the question.
That was the embezzlement case. It's bleeding over a little bit. I wrote something today for TVR. On this, and because we had discussed previously that his original strategy, the governor of stonewalling, plan A would have to go and he'd be doing at least plan D. Today was plan C. So there's more to come in that regard. But, you know, where people here are presuming an indictment would change everything because that would imply that the federal government, at least, the prosecutors at least, felt that they had not just enough to indict him, but they don't indict a sitting governor unless they feel they have, you know, a slam dunk case. And so, you know, until that happens, why would he think of resigning? You say, well, ethically and this and that. Again, if he
weighing the I guess we're in an election cycle and his candidate is struggling somewhat because
he's not interested in his own at this point.
Yeah, that's the point.
He's interested in himself. That's
maintaining a legacy.
Fairly clear.
What legacy? The legacy's gone.
And the other thing which is interesting to me though, when you think about why did he change his strategy in the last since he got rid of the lawyer from Williams and Connolly and brought on Brownlee from the western part of the state, still you know, a major player but in Washington, but not in the Williams and Connolly League. That's way up there, okay? And, you know, we brought on a PR person, I think Rich Galen,
yeah.
Experienced PR person out of Washington, and things have been, they've changed their strategy. There is a case to be made, at least theoretically, that the reason he's talking now, but that he didn't talk 3 months ago, is to whatever they thought the risk was for talking 3 months ago is gone. And so you wonder whether they're feeling that whatever risks he may have had, and one's presuming they were some legal risks, so he didn't want to say anything publicly, they may feel that's gone. That may be why he's talking. That, in other words, it isn't just that he changed lawyers, that there's been something behind the scenes which has changed their view of what his risks are.
Is it possible that what is happening is now there's a greater threat and this is the lesser threat, and perhaps if we try and cut on this, that maybe it distracts from the greater threat?
It could go either way. You could also argue that the greater threat used to be legal and now it's no longer, and therefore you're going at what they always wanted to do. I mean, with most of these things, you can argue it both ways. But I do think that it's probably a better assumption this way, that his change of strategy is not really due to the change in lawyers. It's due to a change in circumstance that we don't yet perceive or know.
And this too, I mean, it's easier for Governor McDonald to defend against whatever's coming than it is for Mr. McDonald or former Governor McDonald to defend on what's coming. I mean, you can leverage political capital. You can leverage the press. You can get
guys. You can leverage your office.
You can leverage your office. And that's exactly what you're seeing here, at least in my estimation, is that somebody at some point in time chose to fight. And in that effort to go ahead and do that, you know, they've made a political calculation somewhere along the line that it's better for them to obtain the governor's office, to hold on to it, to try to push back in the press where they're getting absolutely whacked right now, and try to push back against it as best they can. I mean, that's a political calculation at the end of the day to some degree, but not a bad legal move either.
So, Charlie, you keep asking the question, is he going to resign? What's your personal feeling?
I think that any governor who is in this big a mess and has put himself in this position owes it to the people of the Commonwealth of Virginia to do what's right, and that is to resign.
Where would that put us? And I guess that's a another question. Is if that happens,
Governor Bowling
creates a brand new political sort of mixing.
Give you Governor Bowling at that rate. No friend to Ken Cuccinelli. Walter Stosch would take over the proceedings.
Glossed over that one.
No friend to Ken Cuccinelli. effectively,
that's what they don't call each other. Ken and Bill, do they? No, they don't.
Well,
they don't call each other. Period.
Not without some descriptors, perhaps. But the long and short of it, there. I mean, Walter Stosch would take over the proceedings as president pro tem. The lieutenant governor's office would remain vacant. Life would move on at that rate. Governor Bowling at that rate would be able to set the budget for the following fiscal year, which may be his enduring legacy. If Governor Bowling so chose, he could call a special session of the legislature to address ethics reform. Wouldn't that be a twist? That'd be a pretty courageous move. It'd be one heck of a legacy to leave, not the kind of legacy I think he would have ever perceived if he had actually sat out a contest and gotten elected as governor.
Might put some legislators on the spot.
Would certainly put the gift system in Richmond on the
spot. There's actually another
both parties participating.
You know, that's something
that's
else.
One thing that we don't talk about, but it needs to be raised.
Paul, what do you
say? There's another political thing. If he could convince the Libertarian candidate to step down, I think they could nominate Bowling. They'd probably have to hire Gomer to Marcy to get it done. But the
did you really have to go there, man? Come on.
If you guys are listening, it's a great case because if they were a major party, they could
Lion's Paw Development would not lease space to them. Come on.
You know? But they could a major party could definitely replace their candidate. However, the Libertarians are a minor party, and I believe state law is slightly different. And that could be challenged on a constitutional basis, and I think you could win. So would be possible for the Libertarians to get the same rights as the state party to replace the candidate if the Libertarian
Would the Libertarians want a Bowling, a Bill Bowling on their ticket?
It's not a question. That would be strictly, you know, first of all, they'd be probably the only Libertarian Party in the state, in the country, that would actually have a permanent ballot line, because if they got more than 10% of the vote, which they would be entitled to a permanent ballot line for a period of years.
So it would be in exchange for a parking space, essentially.
Any kind of negotiator could sit there. It's not like Bill Bowling is, you know, Gandhi. And so, you know, I think...
he's close where the Libertarians are concerned.
He's close. Like Buddha. He's certainly, I can see Bill Bowling leading a salt march, no question, down to Virginia Beach. That would be fun to see. But, you know, you cut a deal.
Somehow I don't perceive the Libertarians as being the type that cut deals.
Politics, you know,
you just mentioned something very interesting. In golf, if you win a major, you get exempt from all the tournaments for years out, a number of years out. So what you're saying to me is, if you get 10% of the vote, then you get a permanent line on the ballot for
a few
certain
years. I think about it.
It's the same
about 4 years.
Tenet. It's the same premise. My goodness, I didn't know that.
You get a gold jacket too.
No, you have to borrow that from Johnny Williams.
Green jacket, gold is for the Tour de France.
Right. I would like to ask one thing, and this is it's humorous, but it's a little bit serious. First of all, I think Bowling's done with politics.
You think so?
Yeah,
I don't think so.
Well, okay, where does he go from here?
He's rooting for the Republicans to get wiped out.
No, of course he is. But then what happens?
Well, then
he can't go 4 more years. He's got to find somewhere else to go.
Why does he have to go anywhere? He can just go ahead and sit back. He's got his mainstream pack.
He's a young guy. I mean, he'll be the one Republican that probably has a statewide positive image.
there's a good point,
right? Oh, no, yeah. He would certainly be the favorite in any primary. You know, the thing about what's happening in the country, and a perfect example, Sarah Palin, right? Big talker.
Nothing perfect about Sarah Palin.
No, big talker, well known, one of the powerhouses was, you know, big favorite of the Republicans
even if she's a quitter.
In Alaska.
You're not going to talk about Sarah Palin without me interjecting something negative because she's an idiot.
No, but that's just an
opinion. To Paul's point, I mean, it's okay. I mean, you could say that, you know, he can go around and kind of do the circuit like a Sarah Palin. Pause.
No
comment. Okay, but the thing is that Sarah Palin.
Thank you, Sean.
I tried, man.
You opened the door. I didn't walk through.
So softball over the plate. But Sarah Palin's got a different crowd that follows her.
It wasn't about what I was pointing out to, is that Sarah Palin, you know, got a lot of supporters. But she can't get elected in Alaska. She can get nominated, but she can't get elected. The Republicans around the country, like any political party, have got to face the fact that under our system, the way it is, you got to win elections. The reason the House guys can be where they are is they can still win their election.
Sean just shrugged.
And so at some point, if you want to be a viable party at a national level or a statewide level, you have to win some elections. And so either you got two things. You can just stay where you are and hope the world just comes to you. It doesn't happen. Or you get smart people, a Ronald Reagan type, who says, look, I know how to expand the base, expand my vote, but keep my principles. Yeah. They will eventually have to do that. And therefore, a guy like Bowling, who couldn't win a primary today, might very well be the choice in 4 years because more. For instance, who would have thought John Warner could win so easily after he took on Ollie North? Everybody said he couldn't win. He swept that primary. You've got to give people credit. At some point, they do like to win an election.
Well, isn't he assuming, though, that the Republican strategy eventually has to shift to the middle?
And that's what you're seeing here. I mean, the counterpoint to the example that, you know, extreme candidates or whatever, people that are too far to the left or too far to the right can't get elected. I mean, you saw a little-known, you know, Illinois senator named Barack Obama lower his shoulder and plow right over Hillary Clinton. That is your counterpoint to that at all. So Republicans learn from that. The pendulum swings, and that's where you see Rand Paul, Sarah Palin, those on the libertarian right, so to speak, stand up and say, yeah, this is doable. And what you see happening is you've got the liberal wing of the Democratic Party and the progressives on the far left, and then you've got the libertarian wing of the Republican Party on the far right, and then the conservatives in the middle. And what you're seeing are like the Chris Christies and the Hillary Clintons. I mean, how many Republicans do you hear today say, gosh, I wish Hillary Clinton were president? We wouldn't be nearly in the kind of mess we are today. You get that kind of talk. And so what you're seeing, and you're seeing it on the left and you're seeing it on the right, is that the Bill Bowlings of the world, the John Chichesters of the world. And,
Charlie's eyeballs just bugged out.
Yes, but that's
like
what you're seeing, though, is that the center is starting to hold. I mean, you've got all the dreams and schemes on the left and all the dreams and schemes on the right. You know, it's almost like they want to see Rome burn. And so you've still got
they want to see this country go down the tubes.
Yeah, and that's true for the extremes in both parties.
That's right. Always said those of us who live in the center are homeless at this point.
But you're starting to see that, and you're starting to see it at the national level too, but you're definitely seeing it in Virginia where the center is starting to hold. You get the Chap Petersons and the Bill Bowlings of the world. I mean, they're starting to look at one another and say, we may disagree, but we can work together.
And yet it was too late for Heath Shuler.
So are you agree? Are you?
Back to the Redskins.
The saddest thing that happened in the Congress last year was Heath Shuler was retiring from the United States Congress because he just couldn't put up with it anymore.
Were you agreeing, though, with Paul there, essentially, that there's going to have to be a shift to the center at some point?
Yeah, at some point, I mean, in this, you know, and who knows how it's going to play out, but, you know, either there's going to have to be a shift to the center, or you're going to see is kind of a replay of what you're seeing perhaps in Britain, where you've got Lib Dems and the UKIP. You know, that seems to be where things are headed, and maybe you've got 10% on one wing and 20% on another wing, whatever the case may be, but at some point in time, you know, the politics does come back to the center. You have to be able to govern with your principles. Principles alone, you know, they may work well in the philosophy classroom. If you can't apply them, then if it doesn't matter. If it doesn't pave our roads, so if it doesn't teach our kids, governing matters.
I'm going to debate this point with Sean for a moment, because I don't think anybody wants to govern right now.
The heckler's veto may reign right now, because that's what the media pays attention to. But at the end of the day, when the roads don't get paid, when our public education system starts crumbling, when we're not paying our deputies, when we're not meeting our debts, when taxes are going up to pay for our system that's absolutely crippled by mismanagement, people start to get it.
When have taxes gone up?
It just recently went up for transportation. You know what we did? It was the largest tax increase in the history of Virginia. And you know what it is? It's a giant Band-Aid. In 5 to 10 years, we'll be in the same spot. Why? Because we didn't fix the six-year plan. We didn't fix the secondary roads. We're throwing money at problems. I'll give you a case in point. Fulvana County, I saw my secondary roads budget double from $500,000 to $1 million. You know what we did with it? We paved a road in the middle of nowhere and had maybe 40 people on it.
Oh, that's going to be your legacy.
There's the legacy. But where else were we going to spend it? Because the system in and of itself is broken, stem to stern. All we did was throw money at it. You back it up into the macro, you're seeing the same problem at the state level. You're seeing the same problem at the federal level.
But the problem is this, Sean. The problem for me is this morning. Perfect example. Morning Joe. I wake up. Morning Joe. Okay? And there it is. The president wants to put a jobs plan out on the table, and he wants to do a grand bargain, in quotes, correct? What's the first thing the Republicans do? We're going to do away with the health care system. Why do the bright, shiny objects keep taking everyone's attention, and why do the Republicans and Democrats on the far left and the far right keep putting the bright, shiny objects in the air so that the populace goes, oh, look at that? I mean, why can't we find leaders who will say, you know what, we need to put our nose to the grindstone. The infrastructure in this country is crumbling. The infrastructure in this state is crumbling. The infrastructure in this city where we're at today is crumbling. And yet we're not doing anything about it. We need to do something about that. Where are those leaders going to come from?
It's a strategy, isn't it? I mean, as long as the strategy is working, you stick with it.
And the strategy is what? To keep yourself elected.
Well, yeah.
And not do any good for the population. Not do any good for the people that you serve, but just to keep getting elected.
Paul, you've been very quiet over there.
And there's a reason.
Listening.
Well, Paul, what is it? I mean,
all right, but for all those bad examples that you have out there, I mean, you've got the Mark Warners of the world, you've got the John Chichesters of the world, you've got the Bill Bowlings of the world. They're out there and they're actually doing a damn fine job.
But they can't get the nomination to be governor.
Well, but of course they can. Why? Because the nomination methods in both sides and the power bases on both sides lean to either extreme. And the reason why is because it's the heckler's veto. It's got to pull it that way so that hopefully the center somewhere sticks. Somewhere where it's somewhat manageable expectations. But at the end of the day, at some point in time, it's not sustainable and it doesn't survive. And you're already seeing where people are starting to rally around the standard. You know, it's going to be a process of time. It's not going to happen overnight. But at the end of the day, democracies elect the leaders they deserve. And so long as we're willing to pay attention to the extremes, you know, we're going to get that kind of a government. And so long, and when we get tired of it, I think it's a question of when and not if, then we'll start seeing responsible governance. The question is going to be, what's going to be left to govern after the end of that process?
Wow.
I can't believe I'm going to say this, but I just agreed with Sean Kenney.
So twice in one day.
Holy moly.
So what you seem to be pointing to again, though, is, and the last time we had you on the show, you talked a little bit about, or it was actually on open source, you talked a little bit about the current Republican ticket being a pretty good, solid ticket that this can win.
What?
Is this a last shot for that kind of a ticket, though? I mean, 4 years from now?
Not necessarily. And here's the thing. I mean, you look at both tickets.
I'm not asking you to predict the future.
I'm not going to predict the future. But I mean, let's take the partisan hats off and set it aside for the moment. Ken Cuccinelli, when you start boiling him down to his constituent parts, he's very strident on social issues. I mean, you get him on the fiscal issues and you get him on other aspects, domestic violence, for instance. He's actually got a very Catholic background. It would be the very same background that Terry McAuliffe, who's a Catholic University alum, where I went to school, would share. McAuliffe is not a progressive. He's a liberal. He's from the Clinton wing of the party. So you're not really seeing a whole lot of distance between the two. The question is they've got to find something to pick on each other for. And so it's, you know, war on women, or it's EB5 and things of that nature. I mean, is that really where is that really where the problems of the Commonwealth lie? I mean, we've got a public education system where the Commonwealth of Virginia has backed away, you know, millions and millions of dollars from localities that localities have no way to pick up. You know, that's problem number one. Problem number two is transportation. You know, how are we actually going to fix the problem rather than just throw money at it? The third is healthcare. That's something that we're just going to have to be able to tackle one way or another. How do you pay for that sort of a system with a 20th century tax base or system of taxation? How do you do all those things? We're not hearing a substantive policy discussion. Why? Because it's the same problem that Charlie points to. It's, you know, bright, shiny objects seem to win the day, and gotcha moments seem to win the day. At some point in time, the polity will mature, and those conversations will go away. How that happens, when that happens, I don't have an insight on that. But you start looking at, and you start going down the list. Now, Jackson, objectively, is probably the most conservative and probably strident of all those. But you're seeing in the polls where the voters are not they're not rewarding him for that necessarily.
Paul just looked up from Words with Friends, where he actually is now, I think, another 10 points up.
And then Obenchain, for instance, on the right. You know, for AG, I mean, he's got a fairly substantial lead right now, but he's got a great pedigree right in the state senate for being a lawmaker that knows how to get the job done.
You're poking Paul. He's about to
talk. I am poking Paul a little bit. So, but I mean, all in all, when you start
this
looking
message
at
has been brought to you by the Republican Party of Virginia. Sean, come on, man, give me a break. Calling the Clinton wing of the party liberal.
Look,
when Clinton
look
made deal after deal after deal with who was it? Yeah, Speaker Gingrich. Come on, man.
Made deal or was forced to the table by a Congress
he knew
not
how
work
to do politics
otherwise.
The right
look
way.
At Ralph Northam.
He knew how to do politics the right way.
I mean, wasn't
he made deals that benefited the people of this country and had a great economy.
I think you guys. It was about 15 minutes ago. You, I think
it
you
was Chamberlain.
You had actually had a funeral for the governor, and now his body is forgotten. What
all
happened?
Of a sudden, it's done. It's a typical Irishman. It's a,
he's dead. He's gone. Move on.
But I mean, look at Ralph Northam. I mean, just a few years ago, he was flirting with becoming a Republican himself. I mean, that's not exactly
that's never been. That has never been.
Are you
confirmed.
Calling Jeff Frederick a liar?
No, you did. No, your party
right.
did.
We need to get Paul right. back in here. Paul, do you have anything to say about some of the things that that we're hearing from Sean, the esteemed Sean Kenny over here?
Trying to digest something.
Little agita for you.
Jackson is going to lose badly. All right, you could take that to the bank. If you look at the polls tell you that. It's not a question of whether he's close or this or that. If you look at him, he's going to run 3, 4, 5 points behind. All right? That's clear. No one really knows him.
That's a generous spot, by the way. I appreciate a 5-point.
He's going to. That's a long way down, you know? It'll get worse. He breaks 40, he's having a good day. All right?
That wasn't so generous.
He breaks 40, he has a good day. You know, the ticket, Obenchain in a normal year would have what seems to be a Republican advantage for that spot because his name. It's enough of a name, you don't associate him with sort of the Jackson types. Cuccinelli, somewhere in the middle, hasn't done himself a lot of good this year at all. But, you know, that's sort of the reality of it. You know, the nature of the state's changed, the demography, you know, the in terms of what it was back in just a generation ago. You know, today, when I think Harry Byrd Jr. Died.
Passed away.
He's like the last name from the segregationist era. Even though he was elected to the Senate in 66, the
it's
year
a
after.
A far different eulogy than Sean just
after.
He wasn't necessarily tainted by any of that, his father certainly was.
Yeah, but he was a state. I mean, he was involved. He's right. He wasn't, but his name. His name.
He's at the newspaper.
But, you know, all the names are gone. So it's in a way, it's the passing of an era that basically was over and passed anyway. But the nature of the state is changing. You've seen the politics at the presidential level. And it's not like Romney got wiped out. It's not like John McCain got wiped out. The reason Rush Limbaugh attacked me on his radio show, which
that was another plug. Wow, everybody's plugging themselves.
Did that happen, and what were the circumstances of that, Paul?
Paul was, in fact, attacked on Rush's show about a week ago, I think.
Which is good. And
now I'm going to plug myself. I wrote about it.
You did. You did write. It was a good article, too.
Thank you.
It was based on my analysis of talk radio and why talk radio, the economics of talk radio, contributed to the decline of the Republican Party on the national level. And he could really refute it, so he just did the usual thing the way they do. Oh, now to blame me. It wasn't personal in that regard. But the point is that, you know, the Republican Party needs an economic philosophy that's going to work. The Democrats need an economic philosophy that's going to work. If you believe in, say, the economic interpretation of the Constitution and those various things, that ultimately gets down to the money. And, you know, in this state, Cuccinelli, I think, has a less of an argument in that regard. At the national level, the Republicans are struggling to articulate a philosophy that makes sense to people, even though they have an advantage because most people are anti-government. The Democrats are seen as the government party. The Republicans are seen as the party of free enterprise. That's just how it is. But the Republicans are suffering, and one of the reasons they're suffering is they don't get that, and they also don't appreciate that a lot of their success, from Eisenhower to Bush, the first Bush, was based on Soviet Union and Cold War conservatism, which is essentially anti-communism. Since the fall of the Russians, the Republicans...
This, by the way, is what ticked Rush off.
Since the fall of the Rush, which happened to coincide with Rush's book and everything, they have struggled to come up with a unifying argument, which they've been successful. Remember, They had the bloody shirt of the Civil War, which lasted a long time. Then they got wiped out by the Depression. They came back with the Cold War and the Russians. They need that. And, of course, Rush and his people, they don't need a universal argument. All they need is a sliver of 3 or 4 million people can listen to a show, and they'll all be fabulously wealthy. Okay, they don't got to reach 30 or 40 million.
That's a Nielsen rating, I think, is what that is. That's not an electorate.
Well, the thing is that, you know, to win a presidency, you got to appeal to 60 million people. And so the economics is working against the Republicans. Now, in this state, the Republicans, you know, have done reasonably well when they've run for governor. Democrats have won more times, say, recently. But if you look at the Republicans that have won, They had a broader message. George Allen had some education, and Gilmore had education and taxes. Bob McDonnell had several things. They didn't run on social policy, really. They had a articulation. And the big surprise, I think, in this election to me is that you have a sitting attorney general on the Republican side who should be more experienced with the state. People sort of like that experience historically compared to someone that doesn't. And he talks about how he's more close to Virginians, but he cannot articulate anything but social policy.
That's what I was getting ready to say. He lets the social message get in the way of the good government guy.
But has he, though? I mean, consider this, though.
Yes, he has.
No. 2009, Creed Eads, they took the Regent thesis, for instance, and they threw that up there. They did the reading parties and all of that. And then you get to October, and you get the poll numbers, and the Republicans' final retort is, we should have reading circles to discuss how bad Creed Eads' poll numbers are. And sure enough, McDonnell ended up winning, even though he was painted with the same brush. You're seeing that this time around, although instead of Creed Eads, and McDonnell, who quite credibly made the argument that he was closer to the needs of Northern Virginians or Hampton Roads or the Richmond area or whatnot, you've got Ken Kuchinelli Puccinelli against Terry McAuliffe, who as recently as 4 years ago had just been rejected by his own party and then went shopping to find out whether or not he could run for governor in Mississippi or anywhere else.
You know, you're really good at using words like rejected as, by his own party. Let's be clear about what happened 4 years ago. Okay?
He lost a primary. I guess
because there were two bullies, big guys in the room beating the hell out of each other, and the little guy got the nomination. That's how that happened.
Yeah,
so
I'd agree
so
with
don't
that,
say
but.
He was rejected. He
of
wasn't
course he was rejected by his
no,
own
he wasn't. So that is not a rejection.
And going back, by the way, just for the listener, it was Moran versus McAuliffe beating up on one another with
right.
a lot of money.
Right.
Yeah. And then in the end.
And Cree, by the way, who's a dear friend of mine, just slipped in there and ended up with a nomination because he was not as bad as the other
less
two
bruised.
Guys.
Less
he was
bruised.
Less bruised.
He was less
right.
bruised. Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, and this is where you start applying it to the gubernatorial race. You know, you've got that same kind of dynamic where that's really all that Terry McAuliffe can try to do is try to paint him as this social warrior where, you know, the difference, though, between McDonald and Cuccinelli is like, while Bob McDonald did not, you know, earned his stripes being a kind of a law and order, like in the same vein as Allen or Kilgore or something like that, Ken Cuccinelli earned his stripes by being that social conservative. And so that's where the dynamic changes a little bit. The question is whether or not, I think it was there was an article in the National Review that said that the Democrats' task is to make sure that Ken Cuccinelli looks like Todd Akin, and the Republicans' task is to make sure that Terry McAuliffe looks like Terry McAuliffe. That's the narrative right here, and it's sort of a race to the bottom. I mean,
well,
one side saying war on women, the other side saying corrupt politician, and again, but we're missing all those great policy conversations we ought to be having.
I think the last question that Sean should have to answer is this: When is Mr. Cuccinelli going to answer any questions about Starn Scientific?
I think that the context of having that conversation is in the greater context of ethics reform. We can address the foibles and pitfalls of all 140 members of the General Assembly, including their staff, as to whether or not the gift system in Richmond needs to come to a screeching halt, or whether or not we just need to be able to put $100 limits on it all.
I think he has a 4x6 card down there that he just read. That sounded good.
That was
wonderful. So on that note, we are closing in on the end of our show here, so we need to sort of wrap it up, and I guess what I'd like to get back to is our governor. What's next with this non-scandal? Is there any predictions in the room?
Drip, drip, drip.
I mean, you just took my line away from me, you Republican.
Well,
you
just drip.
That's what I do. It's a free market. Yeah, we're going to keep getting it in dribs and drabs, and I think everybody's kind of waiting on an indictment if one comes down the pike, whether federal or state. But I think you're going to see the Washington Post and the Richmond Times-Dispatch and the Virginia Pilot continue to leak information as it comes, and whether it gets more serious than that, who knows?
Paul?
In terms of changing the arc of public opinion or what McDonald will do, you're going to need something to come out that's, you know, the next standard deviation from where the norm is now.
Right.
If it's just more of the same that in the new normal, then, you know, okay, he'll stay pretty much where he is, and people will accommodate and sort of get used to, well, okay, that's our governor, he'll be gone in January.
Yeah.
Right? But if something else were to come out, it'd have to be big. To get people to say, look, you can't even wait. We want you gone. And I would say there's nothing we've seen, nothing even really that's anywhere in the paper reading between the lines would suggest that that's out there.
So states have had embarrassing governors before, and we're not the first. We'll get along with it. So, Charlie?
We're not Louisiana. McDonald's... the way people see McDonald has not been so bad, even through all of this. I can tell you talk to Republicans, how bad can it be? Well, I would like to congratulate, as a parting shot, the governor on one thing, and that is having good taste in automobiles, in the fact that he borrowed a Ferrari and drove that. I don't know that that's what I want in a governor of mine who thinks that borrowing a Ferrari is a really cool thing to do, because I didn't elect Don Johnson, governor, and so I'm sort of over the whole
real
Miami
quick,
Vice
for the listener,
thing. Okay,
Don Johnson was an actor.
Listen, you don't give. Listen, let them have. There's Google. Let them Google these things, okay? But finally, I do not think this governor will be seeing his term out.
I would agree with that.
And guys, again, thank you all for coming. Sean Kenny, he's chairman of the board of the Fluvanna County Board of Supervisors. They're not meeting right now, are they? Are you,
of course they are. You know, I took a Ferrari here, didn't you?
And he's also,
see my watch?
He's also political editor at BearingDrift.com, which was, I guess, the spark of that ignited this cannon. Charlie Deardorff, local businessman and pundit, and Paul Goldman, number one Words with Friends player and lesser accomplishments, I don't know, with some governor that he worked for. Anyway, thank you guys again for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
And that's RVA Report for Thursday, August 1st, 2013. Thank you for listening. I'm Chris Dovey. RVA Report is co-produced by myself, Charlie Deardorff, and Brittany Tracy. The Richmond Public Media News Team is Brittany Tracy, Cameron Vigliano, and Onofrio Castiglia. News keeps happening, which means there will be plenty more to talk about next week, right here on RVA Report. Join us. About the young idea, the madness, and now you said you fit. The donkey, and the elephant. The donkey and the elephant, they walked one day to school. The elephant started talking, I'm smarter than a mule. The donkey said to the elephant, what make you think it's true? The elephant said to the donkey, child, there's more of me than you. The donkey and the elephant, they never do the thing you want. The elephant and the donkey too, forget for me and you. The donkey, yes, the donkey, he not so very tall. He is so enormous, the brain is very small. The loud and noisy donkey, he make no taxes cut. He sounds a whole lot smarter if he keeps that big mouth shut. Oh, big mouth, hard-head, stubborn jockey, he's dumb in front and same in back. Him ears so long, each look like wing, him kick at everything. The elephant say wages are too high, but when you get your pay, you could stick it in your eye. To eat and sleep and live in peace, we want from Uncle Sam. But the elephant see you starving, but he does not give a hum. Oh, with short thin tail and long fat trunk, with nose and face in one big chunk, ears too wide and eyes too small, no him not cute at all. The donkey, the elephant, they say they make reform. They promise life with luxury, protect us all from harm. The elephant and the donkey have never failed us yet. As soon as they're in power, their promise they forget. Their promise they forget. The donkey and the elephant.